on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
U.S. bishops are gathering for their annual fall plenary assembly in Baltimore in this coming week. This is the first time that the bishops will be gathered together in the pontificate of Pope Leo. This week on Register Radio, we talk with Jonathan Liedl, senior editor for the National Catholic Register, about what all of this means and some very important elections within the conference. And then, Shannon Mullen and I, the editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, have an editor's corner, something we actually haven't done for a long time. We're going to talk about the six-month anniversary of Pope Leo XIV and other things that are in the news. Well, Shannon, welcome.
Hello, Matthew.
And for those who may not be familiar with me, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' vice president and editorial director, and I'm in Washington, D.C. with Shannon, as always. So, Shannon, I know that you're planning also to attend the USECB, as am I. This is something of an annual pilgrimage for a lot of us in Catholic media. How's it been for you?
Yeah, this is, I guess this will be my fourth trip to Baltimore, and it is... It's a unique event. I don't know.
There really is no comparison in other sort of religions, I don't think, but in any case.
Yeah, I don't know what to compare it to, actually. In fact, Jonathan, before we get started on this, you're a veteran of these assemblies. So if you could, very briefly, and I mean like 90 seconds, what is the... U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops, and what do they do and what do they not do, just to sort of set the scene a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Well, I guess it's easiest to start with what they don't do. So the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, the USCCB, they're not a super diocese, right? Like, at the end of the day, as Pope Francis said, Jesus established bishops. He didn't establish bishops' conferences, right? So a diocese, a bishop, that's really, you know, every Catholic sort of spiritual home. At the same time, the church recognizes, right, that we live in nations, we live in countries, we share, political processes and sort of cultural identities with people in other states and in other dioceses. And so, you know, a Catholic conference is something that is canonically called for, canonically erected. It helps us figure out, what day are we going to have this feast day on? Are we going to move it? It helps determine what's the general norm for things like confirmation throughout the country. But then it also plays a really it plays a role, and there's debates about how important it is, but in engaging with U.S. social and political life. So lobbying the U.S. government on issues like visas for foreign priests, for instance, and then also speaking into some of the current political and social issues that our country is going through, everything from immigration to the push for pro-life legislation. So that's really, I think, a way to think about it is it serves as a platform, a voice for the bishops, for the Catholic Church to be a part of the conversation in U.S. politics and society.
Great. Very helpful. And the piece that you're writing for the Register sort of lays out kind of an analysis of why this particular gathering this year is so significant. Very briefly, because I don't think we're going to have much time to get into some of these topics, but there's going to be some presentation, there's a discussion about artificial intelligence. They're going to discuss new directives for Catholic hospitals. They're going to talk about plans to consecrate the United States of America to the Sacred Heart of Jesus on June 12th as part of the 250th birthday of the United States, and some other things. But talk about why this particular gathering this year is so significant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is significant because this is the first time ever that the U.S. bishops have gotten together with an American pope, right? And so that just creates a whole new dynamic, I think, in terms of the conference's priorities, you know, some of the issues you mentioned, but especially things like immigration. But then also it might, you know, have an impact on who they even elect to lead them as president and vice president over the next 3 years. I think it's true that, over the 12 years of Pope Francis, it was sometimes a complicated and difficult relationship between the USCCB and the Vatican. And I think now with an American Pope who has signaled that he wants to do his outreach, like impact U.S. Society and discussions through the U.S. bishops, and has also said, hey, you know, I'm from Chicago. I know the U.S., right? So you can't sort of say that Pope Leo doesn't understand the American context. So I think it's kind of raised the stakes in a lot of ways. It's put the USCCB like under a spotlight that maybe it hasn't been in before, to have a Pope from America who's very interested in what's happening in America and is going to look to the Bishops' Conference to be something of a support for him in that outreach. So I think that's kind of the big overall lens, I think, through which we can view a lot of the different issues that the bishops are going to be taking on.
Yeah, is it notable too, Jonathan, that Pope Leo has, to the degree that he has weighed in on some of our domestic political issues, I think in particular of immigration, that he wants the bishops to be working together, but he's also very clearly, he said, supporting them in that, but that requires them to work together, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because from my read, you know, I'd be interested in what Matthew, you and Shannon, what both of you guys think, but I think the U.S. bishops have been pretty outspoken, about what might be perceived as unjust treatment of migrants during the Trump administration's immigration enforcement. But interestingly enough, just a few weeks ago at the Vatican, Pope Leo met with Bishop Seitz, who is the head of the U.S. Bishops Immigration Committee. And the Pope Leo, said that he wants the U.S. bishops to speak out more on this issue, but that he understands that there are challenges even within the U.S. Bishops Conference. So that was sort of a cryptic kind of comment that we actually caught on someone at that meeting with their, you know, taking a video on their iPhone, we heard. But there's clearly a sense that Pope Leo wants the U.S. bishops, wants the USCCB to speak out, you know, arguably with more force, more strength than they have thus on the current situation regarding immigration and refugees in the U.S. So that very topic. And I would be shocked if we didn't see a number of emphatic, interventions along that topic. And it will be very interesting to see kind of what the, you know, if everyone's in agreement or if there's nuance and a bit of, you know, some people emphasizing, you know, well, we also need to fix the immigration system and secure our borders. I think it will just be very interesting to see, with the American Pope saying that line, what impact it has during the proceedings.
Yeah, let's go to the leadership question. So the issue that most people are going to be paying attention to is who is elected as the next president of the USCCB. Can you lay out some of the front runners and kind of your own take on what's likely to happen?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for a number of years, it really wasn't much of a question who the president was going to be because the bishops always elected the vice president. They elected the sitting vice president to be the new president. But that pattern kind of has been broken off in part because for the past couple of elections, the sitting vice president has been too old to be president. So where do the bishops go from here? Well, last time they faced this in 2022, they elected the current secretary of the conference, who at the time was Archbishop Broglio. He became the president. We face a similar scenario this time around. So I think if the bishops do what they did last time and kind of go with a next man up approach, the current secretary is Archbishop Paul Coakley from Oklahoma City. He's got a bevy of experience working in the conference. So I think you probably think that he is kind of the de facto favorite, right, based off that precedent. But, you know, as we just said, we have an American Pope now. And is that going to change the dynamic up in some way? Are the bishops going to say, we really need to, you know, really go out of our way to pick a leader here who we think really will interface well with the Pope, who shares a lot of his priorities? So if something like that were to happen, I think a couple of names I would throw out include Archbishop Nelson Perez. He is the Archbishop of Philadelphia, definitely thought as a moderate voice, and he's actually worked with Pope Leo before on the Pontifical Commission for Latin America, and he's also helped secure Pope Leo's digital Q&A at the upcoming National Catholic Youth Conference, which EWTN will be broadcasting. So he has that history of collaborating with Pope Leo. It'll be interesting to see if that comes into play. The other name to throw out is Bishop Daniel Flores. He's down in Brownsville, Texas. And in addition to being a border bishop who's spoken out for migrants, he's also been the point person for synodality in the U.S. And he's done it in a way that I think, you know, synodality is very controversial. A lot of people are like, what does this even mean? Is this even part of sort of the church's patrimony? And, you know, from what I've heard and what I've observed, I think Bishop Flores has a reputation for being able to explain synodality in a way that people who are sometimes concerned about its orthodoxy can get on board with. And, you know, Pope Leo has indicated that synodality is going to continue on as a part of his papacy. So Bishop Flores, maybe perhaps because of that, that role he's played before might be seen as a kind of bridge between the USCCB and Pope Leo. So there's 10 names. There, you know, a lot of them are very good candidates. You know, my bishop here in South Bend, Bishop Rhodes, I think, you know, brings a lot to the table as well. But I think that dynamic of the precedent the bishops are going to be working with, but then also how, you know, the fact that we have an American pope now, how that might shift the calculus. I think that's really kind of the story to watch.
Well, as we've noted, Leo XIV looms very large here over this assembly in particular. But we also need to be aware, too, don't we, of the political moment, the cultural moment, and what's happening elsewhere in the country. So to that degree, how much does the polarization in the country, the uproar certainly from the Catholic side on the immigration side, and dealing with the towering figure politically, certainly in the American scene, of Donald Trump, how does all of that also factor into some of the possible votes for president for the conference?
Well, I think in terms of President Trump and in terms of what's going on with immigration, you know, it's possible that a bishop who has been very involved in the immigration situation, even a bishop who himself might have, you know, might come from a Hispanic background, have ties, obviously as an American, but also has ties to Latin America. Perhaps that's the symbolic pick, in which case Archbishop Perez and Bishop Flores would be two possible candidates there. But I do think I do want to emphasize that Archbishop Coakley, too, right? I mean, it's not that these aren't concerns that he himself has addressed. He has spoken out on the need for just treatment of migrants. On another issue important to Pope Leo, he's also spoken out against the death penalty. And his state of Oklahoma has the highest per capita rate of executions in the country. So I do think that certainly there's polarization in the country. There's polarization in the church, and certainly the bishops, there might be different emphases within the bishops' conference itself. But I do think that there's also a fair amount of unity in the bishops' conference, and I think I don't know if it's necessarily the case that they need to throw a curveball to find someone who can lead them through this situation. Archbishop Coakley back in 2023 received 75% of the vote to become the secretary. So I think you're right, Matthew. The situation in the country is very polarized, and I think the bishops, certainly in how they speak with each other and their attempt to find common ground, will be pursuing unity.
Well, Jonathan, we really look forward, as always, to your coverage of the conference and your reporting in general. So thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you in Baltimore.
Likewise to both of you.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio on EWTN Radio. Next up, Shannon and I have an Editor's Corner here on Register Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen here, as always, with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. And we're doing something we haven't actually done for a long time, and that is an Editor's Corner. Basically, it's you and I having a chance just to talk about some of the important stories that people may not be aware of, or they are aware, that we're actually covering. I want to start, though, with something that's kind of important, and that is this issue that the Register's doing on death.
Yes. How about that as a as an engaging topic? Yes, I'm very excited about this. The Register, this latest issue, which will arrive mostly by the 16th of November, comes right in the middle of a month where the church itself turns our attention to death and dying and the four last things. And
well, this is the right month for it.
Yeah. You know, and the theme of our package of stories, and it's a very eclectic mix of stories, is that the church has a lot to say on a topic that a lot of us don't want to talk about. But the church really thinks it is something that we should be thinking about. And really, the message of our stories is that the church's perspective on death is anything but dark. In fact, it's integral to the good news, the message that through Jesus's death and resurrection, he's opened the doors to us to be able to spend eternity with him in heaven. And that's a message, a great message of hope. And so the timing seemed right. It's got an awesome design. So the print readers will really enjoy it. And then we're just rolling out that content at ncregister.com.
Yeah, I know we had a very compelling editorial on this, so I wanted to ask you about that.
Yes. You know, I think it begs the question, why do a death issue? And I think the big reason is unless we have a clear picture of what we as Christians believe about death, that we really can't grasp the meaning of life and the purpose of our lives. And that's a pretty big thing. You have to have a destination in mind. And we do as Christians need to be reminded of that, and in all our families. And so it gets into, for example, this is not new, but there's been over the past 25 years a precipitous drop in the number of Catholic funerals. Mm-hmm. The Catholic population in 25 years has grown by 9%. The number of Catholic funerals, and they do count them every year, right, is down 30%. So what is going on there? And I think a lot of us have family connections to situations where people are foregoing a funeral mass in favor of a prayer service or a celebration of life. Those are all good things. But the other point the editorial makes is this: if there's one thing that Catholic Church does really well,
yes,
it's death, and because it hits all the chords that we as humans deep in our hearts and souls really need to hear. And so there's
and
a
the
lot
church
of
church has a certain expectation from the faithful that when someone passes, that there should be certain rites that are followed.
Yeah, and I know priests and pastors, this is an issue that's really important, and they're troubled by that people are foregoing that.
Yeah. So what are some of the other stories on that issue that you personally really enjoyed?
Yes, there's a great piece by Solène Tadié. She talked about it on a previous issue of Register Radio, this whole idea of whether or not there are wandering souls and how should Catholics really see it. And it turns out to be a really newsy piece that there's a big split among exorcists of whether these are souls in purgatory or asking for our prayers, or whether they're demonic or something like that. Another piece which is really fascinating is, you know, we've seen these medals and these cards, which used to be very popular. If I'm in an accident, please call a priest, right? Does that? And the question we had is, does that still happen? The answer is yes, but not as often as it used to, for a lot of fascinating reasons. Among them being, well, we're all traveling on highways now, and we've gotten really good. The emergency responders have gotten really good about shutting down highways, and so even priests, can't access scenes of accidents. But little things like there used to be police and fire were heavily Catholic professions for whatever reason, less so now. So all sorts of things like that, I think I'm really happy with this issue.
Yeah, and it's not exactly about death, but it's about defying death. I wanted to flag Jonah McCowan's piece, Catholics Caution Against the Transhumanist Quest for Immortality. That's transhumanism is so increasingly tied now to AI that I'm really glad that we're leaning into this, because people don't realize the seriousness of this transhumanist experiment, do they?
Yes, these are the tech bros, right? And they're strangely fixated on immortality, but in this on this earth.
Right. We always ask the question, at what price?
Yeah. But they're so influencing our culture, our politics, our technology. So it's worth taking a look at what's going on with them.
Yeah, on a wider scale, we have just marked this weekend the 6-month anniversary of the election of Pope Leo XIV. And I have a piece that has been posted on that anniversary. But I'd love to get your take on your reflections a little bit on what is striking you most about these first months in this new pontificate.
Well, one issue that you touched on in your piece, which is excellent, is that there's a feeling of anticipation, of waiting, you know, Leo to show his hands and his true colors and things like that. There's the very real possibility that he's already done that.
Right.
And I'm fascinated by an observation that you made. If I could just read an excerpt from your piece, is looking at Leo's first 6 months, there were no dramatic moments, no tectonic catchphrases, and strikingly little controversy. In fact, he has emulated not Francis's call to make a mess, but Benedict XVI in his first words when he was elected Pope in April 2005. The cardinals have elected me, a simple and humble laborer in the vineyard of the Lord. I should note you are the biographer of Portrait of the First American Pope, about Leo XIV. It's published by EWTN Publishing. So I'm grateful to have this piece from you. What are some of the themes that have come up that you've noticed?
Yeah, I think the one that you've just hit on for me is really in some ways the most interesting, because I try to make a point in my piece that about 6 months in, we had a pretty good read on some of his predecessors. You know, by this point with Pope Francis, he'd already said, "Hagan Leo, you know, go make a mess." He had certainly said, "Who am I to judge," which became like the catchphrase of the pontificate, both from the standpoint of the deliberate misinterpretation of Leo in many quarters, certainly about a lot of Catholic teachings, in this case on homosexual persons and homosexuality, but also just this idea that Francis was so spontaneous in some of the things he said and did. In Pope Leo, we don't have those. And with Pope John Paul II, you had Redemptor Hominis, which was his first major encyclical, which came out within 6 months of his election as Pope. That it was also sort of the blueprint for what followed. Everything is in Christ, but that great line that, you know, man is a mystery to himself unless he sees himself through Christ. With Pope Leo, it's been a lot more quiet, and I think I make the point that it is, as you noted, much more reminiscent of Benedict XVI, and it is just simply getting to work. And I think that's something. But at the same time, he has not shied away from being very much engaged with a lot of energy. Pope Francis, whom we keep in our prayers, had very clearly declined in his last years. So we got used to seeing him in the wheelchair. We got used to seeing those limitations. Pope Leo sort of burst out with this youthful vigor for a man who's 70, although that seems less old now as we all get a little older. But that vigor that he has brought, the images of him carrying the Jubilee cross through St. Peter's Square, meeting with a million young people at Tor Vergata, and just loving the moment, and even just the images of his general audiences, in fact, where people are pelting him with stuffed animals and all of that, I think that's indicative of a pontificate that's very much on the move, but not in a dramatic fashion. I also use the phrase that his papacy is one of sort of thoughtful governance. He's really taking his time to make decisions that are going to have lasting impact on the church. I think it's one of the reasons why we have not seen some of the dramatic moves that one might have expected in some of his curial appointments and even his first encyclical. But everything sort of ties together, all of it, to that one central theme that he declared on the day of his election, which is a unity in Christ, but also the peace of Christ. It's that unity that only Christ can give us. And I think that's an anchor that whatever is going to happen over the next years, and we pray that he has many years ahead, I think that focus on unity, of bringing everything back to Christ, which is not new for popes, but for him, I think it is a clarion call to a world that is very severely divided.
Yeah, looking forward, I think on that unity topic, the questions that I have are unity how?
Right.
And how will Leo, as his pontificate goes forward, bring about this unity that he's, you know, that's obviously very important to him.
Yeah, it's an immense project, but one that I think we're all excited to be covering now and for a very long time. Well, that's it for Editor's Corner and for Register Radio this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care, and God bless.